welcome to Vox Vomitus, also known as Word Vomit.
Welcome, everybody, to our latest episode of Vox Vomitus. Once again, I am your host, Jennifer Ann Gordon, the author of the gothic horror novels From Daylight to Madness and Beautiful, Frightening, and Silent. I am once again joined by my two fabulous Vox Vomitus vixens and co-hosts, Allison Martine, author of the Bourbon books. FYI, Allison's book just came out yesterday. It's called Since September. So that's her follow-up. She's drinking champagne, I think. So Allison Martine, the Bourbon books, and Trisha Ridinger McGee, author of the Beyond series, including Beyond the Surface, and the very soon-to-be-released Beyond the Dreams. We are with one of my all-time favorite authors today. I've said this before. I'm a fangirl. I just want to introduce Carol Goodman. Carol, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm here in my home, like everyone is. Thank you so much, Jennifer. Thank you for having me here. It's great to be amongst writers. Something I miss is just hanging out with other writers. And it's just great to be here. So about myself, I've been writing forever, since I was nine. I first published literally since I was nine, but took a little while to figure out how to what to do with that. So my first book was published in 2002, The Lake of Dead Languages, and I've been writing kind of full time since then, full time with some teaching more or less as along the way, but mostly just sitting down at the desk every every day except the days I don't. When people ask me, "Do you write every day?" I say, "Yeah, I write every day except those days that I don't write." My recent book was The Sea of Lost Girls. I realize I don't have any books to hold up, but I could run out at some point. And I just got the title for the book that will come out next year is called The Stranger Behind You. And just got it cover today. So
just checking behind me. Hold on.
I know. It's a Zoom drama. It's like,
and everybody's wearing masks.
Right. Well, I'll talk about that as we go on, the way the pandemic has influenced writing. But that's me.
Carol, my first introduction to you was The Lake of Dead Languages. And I loved that book. At that point in time, I was working as a full-time artist, and I think I even did a painting called The Lake of Dead Languages because I loved your book so much.
I want it.
And since then, it sold. Luckily. I have every book that you've written that I've read, I kept thinking, how is she doing this? She's writing the exact book I want to read. From all of the things that I'm very, very inspired by, pre-Raphaelite paintings, Victorian era spiritualist movements, who inspired the Shakespearean sonnets. All of these things are things that I research for fun. And then to read these incredible books that are mysteries and just drama, it was incredible to me. You are awesome.
Well, clearly I have been getting into your brain and ransacking it for material.
So what I want to know is, how are you doing this? Is there like a chip implanted?
I have my spies. I have my sort of mental... what I always think is I try to write the books that I think I want to read next. And I'm always hoping that there are people like you out there who have the same weird obsessions that I do. Like pre-Raphaelite painting, Shakespeare sonnets and all of that. I think of us as basically being kind of bookish girls, bookish women, who love all the gothic stuff and, you know, read Jane Eyre when we were teenagers, or, you know, or read Rebecca, or, you know, one of the gothic successors of that when we were teenagers. And we just love that stuff. So we want to see it, but we want to see it in new sort of new versions and see what people are making of it now. Because it's that stuff, even though it's all about like crumbling mansions and ruins and all that stuff, it's still sort of strangely alive. I feel like it's, and I still feel like it's just when I think something is like, oh, you know, I probably, you know, this gothic thing that I've been on for a while, or this Hudson Valley thing, surely I've said as much as I can say about that. And then something completely, you know, right down that alley will come across my path, and I'll realize, oh no, I am not done with that. And so hopefully that there are still writers and readers out there who will follow me down that strange dark path.
I love that you as an author are self-aware enough that you just said something that I wanted to ask you about, like, have I done this too much? So mm-hmm. the name of our show is Vox Vomitus, which is word vomit. And sometimes that becomes, like, I do it when I'm doing my first draft. I just, like, I'm doing all the Jennifer things. I'm just throwing mm-hmm. them all on the page and going, oh, gosh, I did this in the first chapter, the second chapter, the third chapter. Mm-hmm. Cut out the word vomit. I don't think any of your books are word vomit, but they do all have, I shouldn't say all, a lot of them have a very similar kind of makeup. There's usually mm-hmm. a college professor or an educator, which that's mm-hmm. who you are as a person, and right. tying a mystery to the past to the mystery of the future mm-hmm. or present. To me, those are my favorite kind of books to read, so they'll never get old. But I just wonder, and I liked what you said, then something new comes across. Mm-hmm. And you get inspired right. again. Mm.
So I think what you're getting to, and you're too polite to ask, do you feel, Carol, as if sometimes you're repeating yourself? Or which I think every writer, especially I've written... I've published 22 books. I probably have written about 25, unless we count the ones that were written before I got published. And it's too confusing to figure out exactly how you count. But yeah, you're going to have that sometimes where you think, have I done this before? Is it beginning? Does this feel old? And that's happened to me a couple of times in the course of my career where I've stopped and thought, am I falling into a pattern here? Do I need to break that pattern? Do I need to stop that? Now, some writers would answer that by doing something completely different, like, you know, writing something that was, you know, an entirely different area. And I admire those people very much. But the range that I want to stay in, I really do love this kind of book. I love this kind of, I think of it as sort of a goth inflected, you know, woman on a journey of identity that involves finding out secrets of the past. Sometimes those secrets are in our own past. Sometimes they're tied to secrets further back. To me, that is, I want to keep reading those. And so I want to keep writing them. But I have a couple of times, I think after my first 7 books, I actually got to that point where I thought, okay, I'm beginning to feel like I've fallen into a pattern with this. And that is actually when I stopped and I wrote fantasy and YA for a couple of years. And so I actually did pause. I didn't pause like any sane person maybe would have gone off and gotten like a job with health insurance. But instead, I didn't do that. Although I did eventually find health insurance through my adjuncting jobs. But I just started writing other things. And I needed to do that. So I did have to, and to me, those things felt related still to my, a friend of mine calls it my wheelhouse, or she calls it the wheelhouse. So they felt related, although
my readership didn't necessarily. So if we're going to start with mistakes, I've made a few. I don't know. I don't think it was a mistake creatively when I went and wrote YA and fantasy. I don't think it was a mistake, but it probably wasn't the best thing for my career. Because there is a sense of, you know, stay in your lane and do, you know, publishing actually kind of wants you to do something similar to what you did last. And when you do make a change like that, it can be hard to rebuild up a readership. And some of your readers follow you and some don't. Some were bad. Some
were angry. The readers for the book.
Readers. I can talk about angry books as well. Sometimes. But when I came back, I liked writing those books. And when I came back to writing a more sort of suspense novels, more along my what I had been doing before, but when I started it, when I came back with River Road after about a 5-year break between those sort of mainstream adult books, the book felt different. And I felt like that was different. And I feel like every book I've written since then has felt different. I do wonder now, I've written about 6 or 7 now since then. So I'm also like, oh, is this the point where, you know, that I'm going to have that itch, that 7-book itch and go like, ooh, wait, what do I have to do now to shake this up?
Yeah, it's a 7-book itch instead of a 7-year itch.
Right.
I kind of think you've done that thing that tells you, okay, when I get to this point, I need to mix it up. And you have this other genre that you can write in. Even if not all your readers follow you, maybe you have 2 audiences and maybe there's not a lot of overlap, but there's nothing wrong with saying, okay, I have books that appeal to adults and then I have books that appeal to younger adults or to children because I don't want my children reading adult books yet. My oldest is 9. That would not be good. So I'm glad that there are people writing quality books for kids her age. I'm not one of them. She can't read my books.
I also, during that period, I wrote a series called under the pseudonym Juliet Dark, the Demon Lover series, and that's not for children.
No. I'm just going to say no.
So I got that out of my system. You know. Not that it's out of my system. It might.
You had an exercise from your system, Carol.
involved. Yes,
more about these. So how would you categorize those books? Is this like paranormal erotica?
Well, okay, so I wrote really, during this period of writing different books, I wrote 3 books that I wrote with my husband under the name Lee Carroll. Those were urban fantasy. So those are Black Swan Rising trilogy. I wrote that with my husband Lee, so we were Lee Carroll. Those are clearly urban fantasy. I would say that's where they fall into, with a little romance and stuff going on. I liked it so much, I decided then to write this series, the Juliet Dark books. Those are paranormal fantasy. Now, of course, we know that I don't think I knew what urban fantasy was when I actually started the Lee Carroll. So, you know, these are fluid, but I would say it's sexier. It's sexier and it's for adults. And then I also wrote a series called the Blythewood books under my own name. And those are young adult. So they're the categories. But they're all fantasy. They all have the fantasy element. And I think that's where, that's the area that I really wanted to explore during that time period. Because my adult books, my sort of mainstream books from Lake of Dead Languages through Arcadia Falls, all have sort of a hint that sort of moodiness that the Gothic has, but no overt supernatural, no, you know, they had fairy tales, but no fairies.
Right. I love that.
Yeah. I love that. But, you know, not such a big leap to me to go to make some real fairies, but other people thought differently.
Well, who cares? Who cares you about care. Them?
You care. I like them.
I would care. I would cry.
But I want to be sad.
I was just going to say, I want to make sure Trisha and Allison can ask you some questions before I ask you like such something silly and dorky later on. So let's start with Trisha, because she has a good thoughtful pose right now.
Well, I understand what you're saying about when you write about certain, they say write what you know, and I think it's also write what inspires you and what you're drawn to. And I think that comes out best. And you also teach writing. And I'm wondering, how do you have that come across to your students to, you know, write what they know and not be afraid to branch out? How do you handle those two kind of conflicting ideas?
Right. Well, so the write what you know is, I think what that means, and of course that always comes up in the writing class, really, I think it means write what you can imagine. It doesn't, or what you know about the human emotions and the human character, which you're going to use in, you know, whether there are, you're writing about elves or fairies or vampires or whatever, robots, you're going to use what you know about the human condition. So you're always going to be writing about that. You know, and I've never, first of all, I'm probably the first or only writing teacher that some of my students encounter who say, like, oh, fantasy, that's fun. Yeah, go give me that. Because I know that they have writing teachers who say, oh, no, I do not like fantasy. Do not give me your your fantasy stories. And I know those writing teachers, and their defense will be like, oh, they'll give me these stories about elves, but they're, you know, they're not, there's no character development. So I'm like fine with the stories about elves and vampires and monsters. I love those. But I will ask for the character development as well. So right. What you know is what you know as a human being and how people work. And I think and we all know that as a reader, if we're reading something and we're like, that's not the way people are, you know?
Well, and I was just going to say, I do read fantasy quite a bit, and I never have a problem with whatever magical world they create or whatever rules go. It's when the people don't act human that I'm going to start saying, no, 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 no. I don't mind about this, but a mother wouldn't do this, or a person wouldn't react this way. That's when they pull me out of the fantasy world. Right. The human is acting so irrationally. So I feel sorry for these students who are being told you can't write in the genre you want because the teacher doesn't feel adequate really to be able to critique their writing. Cause that's really what they're saying. I can't critique writing if it has an elf.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't want to tar the profession of writing teacher
too. Yeah, go for it.
Widely like that. But I have heard it, and I have had students ask that. Well, and it's, I used to teach for a couple of years. I worked for writers and teachers in New York City, and they place writers in elementary classrooms. And I used to do like poetry classes with third graders. And I loved, I would do the whole shtick. I would give, you know, I'd present like, I would do like, you know, the poem, the plums poem, and I would tell them to write a, you know, I'd do a whole, show them the poem and then have them, you know, you're going to write a poem apologizing to someone. I would do the whole thing. And when I finished and, you know, thought I had explained the assignment very well, there would be like the entire, I'd say, oh, are there any questions? And the entire classroom would raise their hands. And the questions would be like, can I write about my sister? And I'd go, yes. And then they'd go, you know, can I write in crayon? You know, does it have to be crayon? Can I write in print? Can I write about Pokemon? That dates me what years I was doing this.
Pokemon's still very popular.
I'd keep saying yes, yes, yes. And I remember a third grade teacher glaring at me with the Pokemon question because she totally had enough Pokemon. It was like, oh. No Pokemon.
No more Pokemon.
Were you the one who was going to be reading these, or did the teacher have to read them? Because if the teacher
maybe she had to read them too. Okay. She had had enough of Pokemon. Yeah. but after I did that, it was a good experience, and I felt like this is kind of my job as the writing teacher, is basically just to keep saying yes. Yes, you can write about that. Yes, you can write about, you know, that you're mad at your sister. Yes, you can write about Pokemon. And I think sometimes that, to me, that's probably the most important thing you can do as a teacher or a mentor or a friend, or, you know, to say, yes, you absolutely can write about that. Just, you know, do it well. I actually won't say that to my those little third graders. You know, but it taught me a lot of times, I feel, in writing classes with adults, that's what they're asking for. They're asking for that permission to write.
I don't know if we saw Laura's
I saw that. Yeah, I saw that flash over. read the comments.
And she's a fantasy writer. Uh-huh. And so she was being told, she was saying she loves that you were told that writing fantasy is legitimate, because she was growing up being told by her teachers not to be reading fantasy, not to be writing fantasy, because it wasn't real writing. So she loves that you're doing that.
Yeah, no, it's always too bad. But look, there's always going to be somebody telling you shouldn't be doing the thing that you want to do. I think that's part of my response is I really hate being told what to do. So I'm doing it.
Welcome to our club, Carol. We are the land of misfit toys. I have so many questions. You hinted earlier about talking about writing during the time of COVID and how COVID mm-hmm. is maybe influencing how and what you write. So I want you to talk about that. And I still have some like a stupid question for later. But,
okay.
But well, important question.
I'll try to answer this question without like wondering, what's the stupid question? What could it be?
It might not be a stupid question.
No, it turns not. It's not. I was thinking before coming on, because the theme of the show being mistakes you have made in writing, and I have, there are many things you've done wrong. There are many times where I've, come to in a book and I was like, oh, what am I doing? Or, you know, or I was researching something. I mean, mistakes I've made a few. So at the time in this year, when I was working, I had started a book last summer when we were, you know, traveling and out and doing all these things. And one of the things I had done, I know, it's so painful. Although I look back and I think, oh, you know, I'm really glad I did those things then. I started a book last summer. I always write. I'm always have a book I'm working on. I started a book last summer that was, I'd gone to a writer's retreat on an island off the coast of Maine, and it was beautiful and inspiring.
On Peaks Island?
No, this is...
Were you on Peaks?
Peaks? No, but I'll have to find out what that is. This was the Norton Island Residency. It's a small residency. It's an island where there is nothing but the residency. It's a little bit rustic.
I want my own island.
Pardon?
I want my own island. That would be nice. Go on, Carol. I do that.
We all do. So when I got there and I thought, oh, I am going to write a book set, because I apparently have no shame. And many people would be like, oh, I'm not just going to write about the fact that I'm on this island. And I was like, oh, I'm going to an island off the coast of Maine with a bunch of writers. I am going to write. So I got this idea that I would write like an Agatha Christie-esque. Then there were none. Don't get excited. So I was going to write, and then there were none kind of book with like writers and people in publishing. And, you know, and just one by one, they die terribly on this island. And it was great. I got my characters. I had like everything I hated about every grudge I had, every little thing that bothered me about somebody, even myself.
This is amazing.
The writer who does this, the writer who does that,
I want to read this.
I know everybody does, except that what happened was, I had a great time on the island. It's a beautiful island. I'd go off every day and walk the perimeter of the island, which took about maybe an hour and a half. And each day I would come back saying, well, found another way to kill somebody here. And, you know, look at somebody. Other people on the island, like most of whom were like poets and visual artists and literary writers. I'm sure they were like, what? Who let this woman on the island? And how it made me need to be more careful. But it literally every day I'd like go across some rickety bridge and I go like, oh, you just have to like saw that. I actually wrote about 85 pages of that book while I was there. And the problem with it, by the time I got home, I realized it was too mean. It was a very mean book. I mean, you know, and I guess, you know, and Agatha, and also I was writing it the third person and, you know, kind of trying to, and shifting points of view, something I don't ordinarily do. And I was like, I can't do it. It felt mean. It just felt like a, you know, did not feel like the book I wanted to write. So I put it aside, but I was also kind of heartbroken about that. So I kept thinking, well, how else could I do it? How could I make these people, to me, they felt very stick figure-y. They weren't. I was killing them too soon, you know, and you wouldn't even care.
Maybe there was just too many of them.
Maybe you won't kill one. But I put that book aside, and it was tough, you know, because, you know, I was about 100 pages into it. Plus, I love this island, and I really wanted to write about the island. So then I tried another version of it, and I kept using the same title. I started another version that was more about, because the relationships that I thought were interesting were these people who had gone to college together. And so I thought, oh, I'm going to make it sort of a college reunion. And it's like, there's this college reunion on this island. And that'll be great. I know this is going to be terrible because I'm going to keep getting you excited. And then saying, you know, like, yes. But that was working okay. But then, and I was working on that, I had gotten to about 110 pages or so in March. And then the pandemic happened.
Then the world ended. Yep.
And then the world ended. And, you know, a lot of people at that time talked about, like, oh, you know, what will writers do? And I remember the last, you know, I remember 9/11 when writers wrote and talked about, you know, how do you write when the real world has become, you know, what's happening in the real world is so huge. There can be that feeling of like, oh, what I'm writing isn't important, or it's not relevant, or this has changed what I'm writing. And I've always actually been someone who felt like, well, you know, all those things are important. And yeah, we have to know about them and, you know, and be socially active and, you know, attend to all of the real world. But yeah, but, you know, my writing is my escape, my, you know, especially in times of trouble, I'm going to keep writing because I have to for survival.
Well, and it's an escape for the readers too. Yeah, so yes. Especially as you have something like COVID, maybe they really want to be in an island where everyone's getting murdered off because they're not stuck on an island when in COVID. They're in their house. Like,
yeah. They go, shoot. I love that.
Well, so my spoiler alert, my eventual conclusion was I realized within a week, I thought, well, they're on the island because there's a pandemic. And so that completely changed the book. At that point. And I decided, and at the same time, I read an article in the New York Times that said, now is not the time for you to write your pandemic novel, and explained. And I, as I said before, I really don't like being told what to do. So being told, no, don't write your pandemic novel now, I was like, well, I'm going to write my pandemic novel right now. That's what I'm going to do. Yeah. And that's what I started, really. I actually started all over again. I put aside the academic novel, I didn't even try to like take pieces from it or from the piece before, and just started again and just thought, okay, they're coming to this island because there's a pandemic. Not necessarily this pandemic, but they're coming right to the island because there's a pandemic. And that's what I've been working on since then. And there have been many moments where I've thought, what am I doing? this feels a little risky to be doing this, but it's, I'm on like page 250. So I've gotten, I think I'm finishing.
You're doing it. You're committed. You have to at this point.
Is this the one that's the title that you told us, The Stranger Behind You, or is this a different
novel? The Stranger Behind You is the book that's coming out next year. Because you know how you're like several, you know, books.
We're always struggling. Like, this is what we're editing. This is what we're starting. This is right. Everything in beta. This is brainstorming. People are like, what about your work in progress? And it's just like, can you please specify what I'm supposed to be working on right now? Because I don't remember.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're working on like usually at least three things because you're working on your editing the next
whatever
to come out.
You're editing, you're publicizing something. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I feel like you have me as a loyal reader no matter what, but island off the coast of Maine is my wheelhouse. It's where mm-hmm. my books are always set, a fictional island. That's why when you said off the coast of Portland, Maine, I went, Peaks Island.
Oh, I want to know what that is.
My books are sort of about, they're about an island off the coast of Portland, Maine. Ooh. But it's a combination of two islands, landscape-wise, and then, you know, gothic-y stuff on top of that.
Yeah.
But, so my dorky question to you was going to be, you said you started writing when you were nine.
Mm-hmm.
What was that? What was your first written work?
Hold on, let me see if I can find it.
Oh, go to the bookcase.
Oh my gosh. Carol, Carol.
Wait, are we getting unflattering shots of me bending over to the
bookcase? No.
Hold on. Just hold on a second.
I love this.
I thought it was right up. Yeah, here it is. So, hopefully you can, as I'm doing this, I'm
like, wait,
I'm bending over backwards in front of
camera. We're all friends here, it's good.
Oh, what? So that's what I wrote when I, in fourth grade, Stories of Animals by Carol Goodman, The Magical Herd. That's what it was called. My daughter has really laughed at my drawing style.
Aww.
Draw better than that.
No, that drawing, is it a horse? Is it a horse, Carol? Is it a dog?
Yeah.
It was a horse.
No, it's a horse and a
it's
dog.
It's a cat.
This is a horse. Anyway, it's hard to do with this. This is Holly named Blaze. This is a cat, right? This is a lion. This is a cat.
I love this.
My daughter is a great artist, but it's clear that. So that's that. It was Stories of the Magical Herd, and it got to be about 60 pages. I think eventually.
That's impressive for a kiddo.
I know. My fourth grade teacher introduced the topic of creative writing. And I was like, okay, I'll do that. And at some point, she had to call my mother in for a parent-teacher conference and say, it's great that Carol likes to write. She has to do her other homework.
yeah.
So that's what I
know that.
When I was in fourth grade. And,
I feel like we've all had that parent-teacher conference.
Yes. I've been on both sides of that parent-teacher conference at this point.
I have too.
Carol, that is the most magical thing I think that's happened on our show so far is somebody running and getting their 9-year-old beautifully drawn book. It was epic. You couldn't see us. But when you went to get it, we all went, oh!
Bending over on video. Not a good move.
You were in the distance.
Not a good look for after how many months in quarantine having banana nut muffins for
solid. Did you bake them? Were you one of the people who was like, I'm making my homemade banana bread? Because that was not me. You.
All right, we are sadly out of time, but I want to thank Carol Goodman, of course, for being here with us and being amazing, inspiring, hilarious, artistic.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Great thank to you. Hang out with you, ladies, and let's do it again sometime.
Yes. Yes.
We're all going to bring our 9-year-old book.
Yes.
We're going to bring our 9-year-old books next time, and we'll be just laid around.
Oh, and thank you.
Thank you for sharing your early work with us, Carol.
Elise von Schemerman.
Thank you. This could only happen in the quarantine and during this kind of. I've never been able to get my art from that. It's, I once thought of bringing it. Somebody asked me actually to bring it to a convention. And I was like, I don't want to travel with this frail.
It's too delicate. I feel very honored that we got to see it. I love your books, Carol. Yes.
Yes.
Oh, this is really sweet. And it's, you know, it's so important, I think, to, you know, feel connection in these times and through books and readers. And, you know, I really appreciate it. And I look forward to reading all of your books. And thank you so much for.
Oh my gosh. The pressure.
I'm there. And congratulations. Allison, I'm looking forward to
your journey. Thank you so much. Allison, Trisha, thank you for being the best Vox Vomitus vixens out there. And the only two other Vox Vomitus vixens in the world.
For me.
Thank you to our producer, Roman Sorotin, and our executive producer, Pam Stack. Vox Vomitus is a copywritten podcast on the Global Authors on the Air Network. And we will see you next week with our guest, Ellison Cooper.